There's a place I have found in the shade.
Welcome to the Permaculture Vine Podcast, Episode 7. Today I interview Dr. Ian Scott from Grow Your Grass Off. Ian has a passion for growing food and helping others to do the same in a logical and regenerative way. He has a diverse background, being a car mechanic, a chiropractic physician for many years, before helping others grow food at Grow Your Grass Off. He has an affinity towards growing rare and exotic edible plants and raising exotic animals. He is currently building out his 3-acre homestead in Florida to feed his family and local community. Hello and welcome to the show. And today I'm delighted to welcome Dr. Ian Scott to the podcast. Welcome, Ian.
Hey, Cormac. Thanks for having me. Appreciate
it. Turn up. And Ian, could you just give us a brief introduction, please? Just yourself, your 60-second elevator pitch.
Yeah.
If you can fit it in 60 seconds.
Yeah. I mean, basically what I love is growing food. I'm a forever student, professionally trained as a mechanic. Have a degree in physical education, kinesiology, and doctorate in chiropractic. Been passionate about growing food for probably 7 years at this point. And that's what I do full time, is help people grow food. I'm a coach and help design and set up permaculture systems for people across the US with my team at Grow Your Grass Off. I think that'll do.
That'll do. We'll go into more detail on that towards the end, but I think we'll start with your personal journey. Just where did you discover permaculture and growing your own food, the very, very start? And then how did you get that, sort of discovering it from getting your hands dirty and getting growing stuff?
Yeah. Super hands-on guy. Always been that way. That's the common thread between all those professions that I listed. Fixing cars, fixing people. Getting my hands on them, and then now stewarding the land, fixing the earth, all that kind of stuff, growing food. So I'd say about, again, 7 years ago, I've got 4 kids now. I had two kids at a time. Almost going to have 3, and just looking at grocery bills, and loved gardening. I set up my whole parents' garden when I lived in Pennsylvania with them. That was more ornamental than functional food, but I always had a passion for that. Almost went to school for landscape architecture in my early 20s. And then again, rising food bills, growing family. And I'm like, why? I'm living in Florida at the time. I'm like, why am I growing anything if it's not creating a yield? It's kind of pointless to have just something that looks good or smells good. It's got to be all of it. Give me food, looks good, smells good. So that was kind of the catalyst. To growing food, and introduction to permaculture really was watching a bunch of YouTube videos and reading books like Bill Mollison's Permaculture Manual, stuff like that, in the very beginning, and just going out there and making a bunch of mistakes for a couple of years and figuring out what you do and what you don't do, because I'd only been in Florida for several, like 3 or 4 years at that point, never grown anything in Florida, so there's a lot to learn down here with, the soil composition and, how much you need water, how much you need to feed things. And why did my, just having kids, high grocery bills, love being outside, love getting my hands dirty. And that's kind of catalyzed this whole third now career shift for me.
Third shot. And then what did you grow? Because I always find it very challenging designing for Florida, because there's so many options. There's like hundreds of things. How did you decide what to grow? Did you just start off with your basic groceries or your?
Yeah, definitely. It's with anything, you realize how much you don't know anything once you dive into something, especially like you said, with Florida, we can grow so much. I'm in Central Florida, 9B, so we can grow quite a bit. It's kind of a sweet spot. We can't grow a lot of the crazy tropicals you can grow in South Florida and South America like that without setting up microclimates and coverage and water hole ponds, stuff like that. But I did just start with the normal grocery stuff, you know, the normal vegetables you see in the store, the normal fruit you see in the store, the garden variety, you'd say peach, pear, apple, that kind of stuff, which a lot of that fruit and stone fruit don't grow great here. You have to get the right variety. So, and then I discovered a lot of the tropical trees. My current obsession is Jabuticaba trees or Brazilian grape trees. So I've got about 20 varieties of those. They just look great. They're actually in the crepe myrtle family, so they're ornamentally great. And then they take quite a bit of years to fruit, but once they get fruiting, they can fruit 5 to 6 times a year, depending on the variety. So it's actually more productive than a normal vining grape, but I don't want to digress too much there.
So are you working as a chiropractor at the time when you're starting this gardening?
Yeah. I was full time. My wife and I, we still own the clinic. My wife's a chiropractor as well, so she's still practicing. At the very beginning there, my wife was pregnant, and then I took over the practice full time. She was on maternity leave for, you know, 3 or 4 months. So I was working full time doing that, actually repairing people's cars probably every other weekend, and, you know, working on this garden, you know, nights and weekends, just trying to do everything as cheap as possible, spending more of the money on quality plants and trying to source free mulch and stuff like that. And, you know, trying to get materials, reuse materials, and even using remodeling my house there. I was, you know, reusing some of the studs and stuff to make frames for, you know, raised beds and stuff like that. So that's always been a passion, is try to get things done as efficiently and as cheap as possible. So you can spend, you know, another $100 on a tree that's like an avocado. So you don't have to wait 6 years. Let's just buy a $200 or $300 avocado tree. So I don't have to wait, you know, until I'm 50 years old. You know what I mean?
And then going from that, so how did your garden go from like amateur who's making all these mistakes, they have having this you had a big food forest in your old property, didn't you? Yep. And what was that process like?
Yeah, well, the real catalyst for that was I was spending so much money, according to my wife, on this hobby. So I set up an actual official LLC in Florida just so I could segregate the funds. And then I started allocating, you know, helping people out at a semi-professional level to fund that. And then when I moved there, I moved from that property to my current property last year. So the backyard was maybe a 10th of an acre. When I left, I had about 130 different types of edible food there, about 16, 18 fruit trees, and then a bunch of sub canopy layers. And it was pretty much a jungle. There's no grass, all mulched, had a paver patio. But a lot of the mistakes that I made or intuitively realized in the beginning is I had a water flow issue. So I intuitively fixed all of my water management in the beginning to set up this basically amazing draining microclimate. Fixed the fence and got all the canopy trees in. So I was pushing zones there with stuff like coffee and stuff in the understory that I could grow.
And that's in your old garden?
That's in my old garden.
Yep. And then you were saying you were helping people out. So that was that your first sort of bit of getting a bit of money back from it, from your permaculture sort of experience?
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't a lot. It was just a formality just to get my wife off my back a little bit. And, you know, but she reaps the rewards here, you know, with getting fresh fruit and fresh vegetables. So she wasn't too hard on me, you know, just trying to, you know what I mean? You're married, you get it, right?
Yeah. So you have then this property jam-packed full of stuff. And then that leads you to your sort of next step in your career. Does it away from chiropractic? How do you get there? How do you get from going from a chiropractor then to actually working in permaculture?
Yeah. So that I was one of the founding partners for Food Forest Abundance. It was late 2020. Chiropractic just wasn't you know, filling my cup, so to say. Just tired of being a band-aid for people not taking accountability for actually wanting to get well, you know, and just coming in and using chiropractic services, manipulation, you know, physical therapy, that kind of stuff, just as a crutch. So I just didn't have the emotional capacity anymore to treat hundreds, thousands of people, you know, and I wanted to do something a little bit different and make a bigger impact. So I met Jim Gale, who's CEO of FFA, literally on a Facebook post looking for local installers. I worked 4 days a week at that point. My wife worked the others. So I had a couple of days off. That's when I was building my garden, and I could probably help him. So we linked up and started doing a lot of marketing in my area for him. And then it kind of catapulted to me being head of design, because I was doing some hand rendering at that time, which he was impressed with. And then he saw my backyard. And so one thing led to the next, and we started going crazy and went on the higher wire with Jim and Texas, and just catapulted from there. And obviously that's where we met. I met dozens of people, dozens of designers, and we did, by the time I left a couple months ago and started my new gig, but we'll get into that. But that was the big catalyst, was meeting Jim and really just getting to professional and making sure we had good ethics and helping people out and just going gangbusters for 2 years. It was kind of a time warp, to be honest with you, but a fun one.
As you just say, that's where we met. For full disclosure, Ian was my old boss. So what was that like, managing all these designers? Because I think it was up to 40 at one stage, wasn't it? And you as head of design, having to proof all these designs and manage all these designers. So you've probably quite a unique insight into the world of designers.
Yeah. So that brings up too, like, formality. I don't have any formal education for permaculture. Learned by fire, learned by doing, learned by a bunch of YouTube videos and books, and then by diffusion. You know, we did have 43 designers at the peak when I was there, and reviewing all those designs, you can learn quite a bit when you're reviewing designs from Florida to, you know, Canada, pretty much. And then we had 10 or 11 different countries we were doing designs in at that time too. So it was a whirlwind, you know, reviewing all that, setting up all the systems. By the time I left, I was the VP. So I was pretty much everybody's boss, but that's my personality. I'm good at recognizing patterns and shaping things and just doing 1,000 things at once. So it really, maybe realize where I can excel and setting up stuff and helping. I just love helping people and support. I'm a good support role. So that's really what I was doing for the whole company. And I did enjoy it. So.
Well, I think that's an important thing to say there as well. You don't need a formal education, because even the previous guest, Colin, he learned by doing. He just goes out and does. And I think it's, people have a good word on you, so it's not essential. And your proof's in your pudding with your garden and your properties. Just from a lead, like sort of from a design professional point of view, seeing all these designers that you brought in, trained up, would you have any advice for a designer? How do you sort of think, how would they get ahead? So if you were a head designer now and I was coming to you as just a PDC, what advice would you give? Or even someone not with a PDC, someone who's knowledgeable. So they either have a PDC or they're knowledgeable. How would you advise them to go to a professional designer?
Yeah. If they don't have a PDC, obviously do a PDC. I could obviously recommend a bunch of places. But and then after that, of course, now I'm going to recommend they come see you guys to do a PDC to professional program, because it makes sense. But, you know, getting that base of training for rendering computer wise, reviewing your work, having people give you input that you trust, just trying to be as professional as possible, always trying to excel. And then, even reaching out to friends and family, doing practice designs, that kind of stuff with people is really good. And then there's a lot of people I saw like that interviewed with us that had no hands-on or gardening experience, which is crazy to me, but go grow a garden and actually get your hands in the dirt is the number one learning thing, because you're going to make a bunch of mistakes. So that's pretty much what I recommend.
Yeah, that's what Rakesh recommended last week as well. Just get out and do. Mm-hmm. And then in terms of, I know what I discovered anyways, communication's a big skill to have.
Yes.
Talking to people and it's just talking, over communicate if you need to.
Over communicate, yeah. And I don't want to say fake it till you make it, but you know, just posture yourself as confident and professional, and just have humility and accept mistakes and, you know, recognize when you're wrong and have, you know, just being a human and talking to people human to human, you know?
Yeah. And then, so yeah, now your new project, Grow Your Grass Off. Do you want to tell us about that?
Yeah. So we've got three partners, Lana Medina out of Washington, Kevin out of Kim Feinstein out of Tennessee, and then Brandon Moncrief out of Costa Rica. So full disclosure, all of us came out of FFA, core team there, really operations based, really was a catalyst. That's part of the separation. I wish FFA well, but got some differences in opinion how things need to move forward. So for my sanity, I ventured off and formed this business with these three. So really our focus is training, personal training for food growing, really geared towards DIYers. Our kind of avatar client, ideal client is one of two things, usually a young family with kids that's trying to support basically what I was when I started, and then seems to be older females, whatever that is, 40, 50, 60, that have a little bit of free time and disposable income and just need some support. Maybe need some physical support, and we have a network of people that can come out and help depending on where you're at. So really it's just kind of get down to the nuts and bolts and actually teach people and empower people to do this that need a little bit of a jump start, and they don't have 2 or 3 years to make a bunch of mistakes and watch conflicting information on YouTube and online. They really just have someone in their corner as accountability, you know, someone checking in every week. Okay, what are you doing? Did you do this? Why didn't you do this? Because a lot of people need that, including myself. You know, so that's the gap we saw, or the need we saw. So it's just getting the word out there that we do have a lot of experience, and we want to just help people get down to that nitty gritty and getting your hands dirty and talk about all the details that no one wants to talk about, and the failures and just expecting all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's very important, the failure, but I think it's a, and I like the way your model set up to support people. So that you're there for them, almost like a phone call. What do I do now? I'm stuck. I don't have 2 days to look for the solution.
Right.
I want to know where they go, because it's, to me, it's important you get as many people doing this as they want, as we can. And the more people that do it, the better. And so you have three co-founders. me also. How have you found that? I suppose it's a different transition for me, because you'd work with them already. How was that? How does that dynamic work?
Yeah, I mean, I'm still kind of pseudo the boss, because I was everybody's boss before, but it's good. I mean, we're all equal share partners, trying to get everything just equal. Everybody has equal input, but there's got to be a tiebreaker, and that burden is on me. If we just can't decide, then I have to make decisions. That's kind of how it's set up. I mean, I respect all three of them. We all have different skills, even though we have commonality and we all know how to grow food and love that. You know, one person does all the tech stuff, one person does all the teaching primarily, and then one person does a lot of the social media, and I do a lot of the outreach and networking and stuff like that. So our separate skills, but our commonality brings a lot of strength. And again, we have a lot of trust and respect for each other because we've worked together for a little over 2 years. So it works. The funny thing about it is we've never met in person. So we're all looking forward to meeting in person. So it's kind of funny. That just shows how much we trust each other. The closest person to me is an 11-hour drive, you know? So it's not like they're super close. But it's exciting. We're excited.
Yeah, I understand. It's exactly the same. We're in as well. We have myself and three other co-founders we've never met. But I think you just have to, trust people until something goes wrong. But as well, we all work for FFA. And it's crazy the similarities between the two groups. Something that we found was like doing it on our own was impossible. Yeah. Because you can't do everything. And then, yes, there's plenty of successful one-man bands out there, but stacking your throwing your hat down with somebody else, I think, gives you credibility straight away because you can obviously work with people.
Right.
So if three people have agreed to work with you, then that's a good sign.
Usually, yeah. And part of it too is we all have a similar goal is to take care of our family. So if we can be as efficient and grow a team and have contractors that can help us do this training as we grow, then all four of us have young kids. So we want to actually spend as much time with them and growing out our homesteads as much as possible on top of helping people. So I think that helps. We all have a common goal. We all striving towards that, which I'm sure is similar. For you guys, a lot of you have kids too, so
yeah. Well, again, it's we all have kids, we all have young families. Well, not all of us, some are older families, but we have our own places that we practice at, and then we have sort of ambitions then for like education centers and do local work. And the thought was, well, why create all this education material and just keep it for ourselves? We can actually, three or four of us get together, create the content, create the material, and then we can all use it.
Yep.
More people get it. It gets produced quicker. We're pulling our experience. And something you touched on earlier there as well was, as designer, it's good to have people to just say, here's the design, what do you think?
Right.
And Crystal's very good at just being nice, but telling you you've done something, questioning you in a way that makes you think instead of just telling you you're wrong. So it's good to have that peer support. And then also as well for our own properties, we can say, look at this. What do you think? What should I do? It's just have that sounding board, which is, I think, is very important. So we appreciate that not everybody has that. So that's part of the purpose for this podcast as well, as they try and build that community of designers and professionals that through the LinkedIn group, that we have a sounding board for people that and a trusted source that you're not worried about, like, oh, he's going to steal me design or steal me ideas. It's like an open forum for just sharing and say, look, here, I'm stuck, or is there anybody worked in this climate before?
Right.
Which was a good part in the FFA that they had that, and working with so many designers. So trying to build that community for independent designers all over the place.
Yep, exactly.
But that's down the road.
Yeah, because a lot of clients really just want the hands-on. They want someone in person. A lot of people walk them through and walk the land. So, you know, what better way is to have an international network, and we just have whatever, referral fees, commissions, whatever, it doesn't really matter. But just trying to get the client, you know, the best experience is really the goal, at least for us, and I'm sure it's for you too. So
yeah, definitely. One thing I wanted to do chat to you about on a sort of for my own personal thing, is right. So you moved house and you moved to Food Forest. So I'm basically moving house now as well. So my house is going up for sale in the next couple of weeks. Yeah. How do you prepare for that?
A little bit of trauma thinking about that. So the backstory is I basically had my nursery in my understory. So I had probably 250 potted plants inside my food forest. So I left most of my food forest there. I only dug up like four trees that were more rare, more expensive. So you definitely got to mentally prepare. I literally filled 2 20-foot trucks with plants and outside materials just from my garden. So it's possible, and it's bittersweet because I spent almost 4 years on that garden, a little more than that, 5 years on that garden, growing that out at a high capacity. So you have to leave all that behind and start over. So just mentally prepare for it and get everything in pots and everything situated as much as you can. And it's hard because you want to group everything and keep it watered, that kind of stuff. So just try to keep your sanity, and because it's going to be a trip. But it definitely took us quite a bit to move, you know, a family of five at that point, all that stuff and the normal moving stuff. And there's a whole other stuff. I had a car that went down. I replaced an engine literally a week before we moved, and, you know, moved a whole food forest. So it was not a nightmare, but it was definitely a growing experience, not to be have a pun there.
Right. So it's just basically getting everything in pots, getting it organized, and just getting it shifted. There's no secret. It's just grunt work.
It's just grunt work. Yeah. Just looking at the horizon. So I moved to 3 acres. That's partly why I moved. I needed a bigger house because my son, now 8 months, we needed more rooms because we were in a 3-bedroom and my kids were all sharing bedrooms, two and two, which is a little tight, but doable. And then I wanted more land. So I've spent quite a bit of time here. So there's a lot going on here. I probably have 1500 to 2000 square foot. I don't know what that is in square meters, of garden already established. So I've got 8 chickens already, a coop already established. So I'm working on clearing part of my forest, which is mostly pine trees, which I'm using for firewood and bed edging and mulch and stuff like that, just so I can create these microclimates. Got really good coverage on two sides of my property, and have a little pond that to rehab and get set up. But really just keeping your eye on the future, and hopefully you're moving to a place where you can grow a bigger garden and be more productive and try to get more sustainable so that you can feed your family more. Just trying to focus on that as you're going through all that grunt work. There's pot number 320 that I'm moving in.
And so is that the plan? What's the plan for 3 acres? Because I know you have some rare animals and some rare plants there.
Yeah, that's my passion, is just rare animals, rare plants. There's actually 2 acres of undeveloped property, or sorry, 6 acres of undeveloped property right next to me. They're 2 lots. So I'm hoping I can acquire those over the next year or two. Currently have 14 animals. The normal cat. I have a parrot, 2 tortoises, 8 chickens, and 2 rabbits. So I'm trying to up the amount of tortoises I have. I like tortoises, rare animals. So I want to make almost not zoo enclosures, but Jabuticaba actually means where tortoises gather. So I'm trying to make these things that are like natural environments. So let's have endemic Brazilian species that are in the enclosures for these animals that are from Brazil. So I take it to that detail level, and then definitely have a passion for growing fruit that's out of zone. So I have a bunch of like jackfruit and vanilla bean, stuff like that, that you didn't think we could grow here. But again, if you have the right coverage, microclimate, and setting up overhead irrigation during the 5 minutes we have frost, then you're pretty good. It just takes a lot of observation and attention. So I do have an LLC that I set up years ago that's going to be for this. So once I get up and running, making air layers and making new plants, selling seeds, selling produce primarily to my neighborhood, we'll get that rolling. I'm going to make a little produce stand at the end of my driveway in the front, and or get a golf cart, because everyone has golf carts in Florida, and just do delivery, or have my my 14 or 15 year old daughter do deliveries or something once we get up and rolling. And then we're probably going to set up a treehouse if we can acquire those other lots and do Airbnb rentals so people come get trained with us or just stay the night, and then clear some of that for pasture. My wife wants alpacas because she does a lot of knitting and making clothes, scarves, that kind of stuff. So, and alpacas are super cute. So there's that. So there's a lot more there, but the dream is huge. I'm just trying to create a place that inspires people. This is our garden. It's trying to get to that 100% sustainability for feeding all my animals, minus growing hay for like the tortoises and alpacas, because you need a lot of land for that, but feeding my family of six. And kind of the next steps, we do have solar already, so we're making pretty much all of our electricity. Just need to get some backup batteries and get some water catchment and stuff like that to harvest those resources. I do have about 350 yards of mulch in my front yard already from a local tree company that I got for free. And then I'm working on trying to talk to a logging company this week to see if they can come out and cut about 30 pine trees out, because I want to take all of them out of my front yard so I can get pretty much entire fruit trees and permaculture forest in the front and about an acre in the back of my yard. And then the back acre and a half is boggy, so I've got to work a lot on land management there and possibly setting up ponds for like tilapia and stuff like that, and growing some trees. There's one tree you can get, it's called a pond apple. It'll grow in 3 feet of water for quite a bit of time, so you can actually graft other types of tropical trees on those so they can sustain literally growing underwater and fruiting. So working on crazy stuff like that, just using the land, what we have, and trying to be as efficient with resources, because it takes quite a bit of resources to clear land and elevate, you know, an acre of property, you know, a foot or so it doesn't flood. But there's a lot there. I'll stop there.
Yeah. So, well, I think your point you're making is there's multiple income streams. So as well as doing the remote stuff for growing right. grass off, you're actually demonstrating your right. demonstration site, which you can use for your advertising and marketing. They say, look, I'm credible. Yep. And then as well, you're actually implementing local business models, which contributes to your community, and you're building that community. Yep. What do you call it? Social capital.
Yep.
So it's you're becoming a good member of your community by providing a food service, and also showing people and demonstrating, hey, look at this, this is a new model of way of living. Because to me, that's mm-hmm. important. It's like you can go out protest and shout and scream at the TV all you like, but you just have to love it. And
yep.
it'll take a while, but to me, that's the only way you can actually start to turn the dial and make a difference. It's just, and then particularly with young children, mm-hmm. educating them is just, you have to just love a certain way, and then they're educated. There's no formal way of doing it. Just do it.
Yep.
So what does the future hold now for Grow Your Grass Off?
Right now we do have a webinar coming up, which we can talk about in a little bit. That's later today, Eastern time. Really the goal for this year is obviously to get as many clients as possible up and rolling, because we do have a network of designers that do want to work with us. And we're just trying to create more job opportunities for everybody, and again, grow all of that. We do have a YouTube channel as well, so we do have bi-monthly episodes on YouTube and Spotify. That's the main goal, is just continue to openly communicate with partners, which is key because we don't live near each other, and you know, we're always learning. We're always trying to dial it in. We're always trying to improve the customer experience and always appreciate feedback, because we get to this point where I don't want to say expert level, but you're so engrossed in what you do that you forget that people don't even know what soil is or how to water, or that there's actually bacteria in the soil that's helping plants grow, and there's a relationship between plants that you plant next to each other. So that's why we're going back to the basics with our webinar later today, which my partner Kevin will be teaching. It's how to start a garden, just the basics, and just starting there and just trying to bring people along and encourage people. It's all about inspiration and education and just being good people and taking care of people, and every dream and every goal we have will pretty much follow. That's what I believe in. Just put the work in and it'll work out, you know?
Yeah, that's much the same as ours. People need it. They're going to need it more. So hopefully it'll start. If you build a little cup, that's what I keep saying. Ian, is there anything else you want to tell us about today, or what, before we go, or where people can find you? Is it screwyourgrassoff.com, isn't it?
Yeah, growyourgrassoff.com. We're also on Instagram at growyourgrassoff. We are on Facebook. We have a private group there. And then, like I said, we're on YouTube and Spotify. And then if you want to follow my personal homestead, I'm at Sacred Acres Florida on Instagram. That way I'll just be, might have my own YouTube channel coming out too. Might have my 12-year-old help me narrate that, because he loves doing that kind of stuff and trying to get him inspired. And really just trying to show people that there's another way of living, like you said. And then we can grow food, we can teach people, we can teach these skills at a young age, so people can recognize the weird fruit in the grocery store that you should already know. But that's about it. And then just want to let everybody know that we support Vine Permaculture, and then we support another partner, Thriving Roots. So you guys do need, you know, professional design training, please go to Vine. They're awesome. And then if you need any install help or install education, then go to a partner, Thriving Roots. And I really think we've got a powerful coalition of companies here and network, and really have a passion for helping the world and making a positive impact. So that's what I'll end with.
That's great, Ian. Thanks very much. And I would definitely recommend going over to Grow Your Grass Off and having a look. Although we may seem competitors, we do offer different services, so it's not a problem. Ian, thanks very much for joining us. It's been great. I'll put all them links in the show notes.
Sweet.
And I'm sure we'll be hearing from you very soon.
Mm-hmm. You will.
And keep an eye out as well for the webinars, the Grow Your Grass offer or having. And guys, thanks very much for listening. We have our designer's kit as well for sale. If you're a designer, that's built basically from our experience. What questions do you ask a client? There's some guilds in there and just basically the process. And as Ian said, we also have the PDC the professional coming out, which will basically take you from a PDC to what it takes to be a professional designer. From digital rendering, client communications, and just being a professional designer, what it requires. So, guys, thanks very much for listening, and we'll see you next week.
When I go there to be by myself, only me, no one can guess what I came there to see.